Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome to the Daily Jungle. Crazy, crazy night in sports, and maybe the worst opening night in the NBA ever, because Gordon Hayward's foot went in a direction that it certainly should not have gone in. Only 5 minutes and 15 seconds into the season, that was absolutely horrific. The Dodgers, meanwhile, pushed the defending champs to the brink after clowning the Cubs in Wrigley, and Aaron Judge continues to do Aaron Judge things. A couple of nice guests, too. Former Major Leaguer Johnny Gomes, who was awesome, reporting from the scene of the devastating Wine Country fires. We also had Houston Texans DB Kareem Jackson. Alvin, I know your equipment is falling apart. If you can, just go ahead and roll it. The NBA regular season opened up last night, and the question was whether October through June could live up to the adrenaline of June through September. I mean, when have we ever asked that question? And to me, the answer is probably not. I mean, not even close. Yes, you had the energy of Kyrie's return to Cleveland, and you had Golden State getting their rings because Kevin Durant got the Rockets on a buzzer beater until a replay revealed that he didn't beat the buzzer. Rockets win. And you can cue all the fresh, guess the Warriors aren't as good as we thought takes. I mean, wrong. The only thing we learned from that game is that Golden State is not going to go 82-0. That's it. But as good as that game was, I'm just going to go ahead and declare last night to be the worst opening night in a very long time. Not because nothing could live up to the hype of the offseason, although it's true, nothing was going to match that. But the night was ruined just over 5 minutes into the season when Gordon Hayward went down with one of the most gruesome, nasty injuries you will ever see. So nasty, I know that I never want to see it again. I'm not even sure I want to play it on the air. But in case you haven't heard about it, here's what happened last night.
Kyrie lob looking for Gordon Hayward. Ooh. He throws it into traffic. It takes a funny bounce, though, right to Jaylen Brown, who gets to the cup.
Uh-oh.
And lays it in, but Gordon Hayward is hurt.
He's broke. His leg is broke. His foot is broke, Sean. He is
broken. Gordon Hayward landed awkwardly. We have Celtics with their hands on their head, and it is season, a summer in which everybody thought they knew what was going to happen. Everybody waiting for a wild card, and 5 minutes and 15 seconds into opening night, as gruesome a wild card as you can imagine has just been dealt to the Celtics.
Yeah. His foot was completely turned the other way. You can see everybody kind of walking away. He was almost in shock as he looked at his foot down, turned the other way. That ankle is broken, and that probably will do him for the season.
Celtics radio. I mean, truly terrible. Truly terrible, terrible moment. I mean, I legitimately yelled when I saw that happen. I tried to change the channel. I was so rattled, I could barely even work the remote. And if you didn't see it, here is the description of the injury in the aftermath from Chris Mannix. Mannix writes, Hayward, swiveling his body towards the Cavaliers bench, his ankle fractured, his foot twisted nearly 120 degrees, hanging limply off his leg. Referee Monty McCutcheon immediately singled a timeout as Cavs players seated on the bench recoiled, leaped to their feet, and raced off the floor. End quote. Now, I'm really not sure how Hayward was not screaming his lungs out after that. I assume it must have been shock. I know I was in shock. You could tell everybody else on the court and in the arena was also. The looks on the faces of Kyrie, LeBron, Al Horford, Tristan Thompson, and everybody else told that story. Shock, horror, nausea. I mean, I still cannot get that image out of my mind. I don't think I ever will. It was that grotesque, that troubling, that disgusting. Kyrie said afterwards, quote, it's tough.
It's tough. I've seen a few injuries in my career, and I've had a few, and I've seen a few, and probably two of the worst ones I've been in the game watching. One was at USA, and this one was tonight.
And again, it's not just his own teammates. You could see the way the Cavaliers reacted and responded. LeBron spent some time with Hayward before he left the floor. He also said, I've seen some terrible injuries, and this one's right there.
I seen Paul George when it happened to Paul. I was watching the game with Sean Livingston and when he was with the Clippers. And I was watching NCAA basketball with Kevin Ware. when he's at Louisville, and those are the injuries that, you know, you never see coming. You never want to happen, no matter who it is, no matter what the stature, no matter how much competitive nature that you have. It's just very unfortunate.
LeBron. And if your name is mentioned with Paul George, Kevin Ware, and Sean Livingston, that is terrible, terrible news. As for George, he tweeted, "God bless you, bro, at Gordon Hayward. Help him through his God, or this God." Sean Livingston tweeted, "Three prayer emojis and at Gordon Hayward, only God has all the answers." Chandler Parsons, Carl Anthony Towns, Dwight Howard, DeAndre Jordan, the list of players and NBA teams who tweeted out love and support kept growing. Again, just a terrible moment. And it's hard to know what the worst part of that was. The injury itself, the freak nature of the injury, the fact that we didn't even get 6 minutes of the Kyrie Gordon Celtics before their season was over. I mean, the list goes on. The fact that the Celtics still managed to be competitive last night is incredible, because I didn't even want to watch that game anymore, let alone play in that game. That is the worst injury I have seen in a very long time. And it's a reminder of just how fragile and fleeting everything is. This guy did everything in his power to get ready for this season. New team, new opportunity, doubled down, was totally prepared, never looked better, never felt better, and it was all blown up in 5 minutes. On a play that he's probably executed hundreds, if not thousands of times in his basketball life. Sean Livingston made it all the way back. Paul George made it all the way back. Hayward can too. But I would give anything to scrub that image from my mental hard drive, but that's just not going to happen. It's an absolutely terrible injury. Get a quick phone call in here. Let's go to Maine. Ryan in Maine.
Jimmy, Ryan,
good morning.
How
are you? What's up, Ryan?
Not too much. That Dodgers-Cubs series is over. It was over quick. Just definitely not as quick as my Celtics basketball season. That season is now over. I am sick to my stomach about the injury. I physically could not get out of bed this morning, and therefore I had to call out of work. And I don't know if I'm making it the rest of the week, Jim. It ended so fast. It was such a promising season, and it had a gruesome ending.
Hey, Ryan, you legitimately didn't go to work after you saw that? I mean, did that hit you that hard?
Jim, I had to skip work. You don't even know. Boston was ready to take down the Cavs. We were ready to take down Golden State this year. No doubt in my mind, Jim.
You know, it may be the case, Ryan. See, that's really something. I appreciate that. Thank you. I mean, he literally said, "I could not get out of bed. I was sick to my stomach." Seeing that, I was sick to my stomach. And so my then follow would be, you were sick to your stomach because the injury was so gruesome, or you were sick to your stomach because you know your season's over already, or both. It was gruesome. I've done this a long, long time. I've seen some pretty gruesome things. I mean, even all these years later, I can't tell you how many times I've spoken to Sean Livingston. And maybe it's because I've spoken to Sean Livingston so many times, I can't watch that injury. I can't watch what happened to Kevin Ware. I can't think about what happened to Paul George. I mean, these are gruesome, gruesome injuries. Like the type of thing that if you're watching on TV, you can't get to the remote quickly enough. Or the type of thing that if you had missed it and you were out and about and all of a sudden your phone started to blow up and you looked at it on your phone, you drop your phone if you saw it. Terrible, terrible injuries. I saw a post, a really amazing post from Kobe Bryant to Gordon Hayward. You should read this, where he's talking about the Mamba mentality, but don't dismiss it. That's just Mamba mentality. He's talking about how he should process this injury, how he should feel, how he should approach it, how he should attack it, what it means. It's a really interesting Instagram post. Too long for me to read here, but you should check that. I guess that tells you how much it means to some people. That's a Celtic fan who said literally, "I could not get out of bed this morning, and I called in sick." And back to the error point, it just goes to show how fragile and how fleeting this whole thing is. I guarantee Gordon Hayward did everything he possibly could to get himself ready for this critical season. He got the big contract. They were in line for a shot at a world championship. He'd spent his entire life working towards this moment. And 5 minutes into the season, the whole thing gets blown up. And maybe their season. Celtic fans, I want your thoughts. Again, that guy just said, "I can't get out of bed. I can't go to work. I called in sick." That's how bothered I am by this. All right, when we return, Johnny Gomes is going to join us. Got a good reason to put him on. You'll find out what that is coming up. Top of the hour, Kareem Jackson. In the third hour, Gary Sheffield. Johnny Gomes is my guest. Johnny, it's so good to have you on. How are you?
All good, buddy. All good. I mean, it is what it is right now. Heavy heart. This got this going on, that going on. But, you know, share it with you, Jim.
Exactly, Johnny. So you and I could talk about any number of things right now. We could talk baseball. We could break down the postseason from the perspective of somebody who's been through it. But it's not nearly as important, Johnny, as what you're doing right now. You're a World Series champion. You played baseball all over the world, but nobody reps the 707 and Petaluma harder than you do. So what was your reaction when you first heard about the fires in Northern California?
Yeah, man. I mean, it was tough. I mean, once you got it kickstarted about a week ago, you know, it was heavy. And then it just kept pouring, man. I mean, it was like a war zone out here. It was just bomb after bomb after bomb. I mean, it was a full-blown, zero-contained fire for, like, 6 days. And, I mean, it's still just as smoky as all get-up right now. I'm actually on-site at Cardinal Newman High School, cruising through right now, just torch desk, torch libraries, just left a whole neighborhood that got flattened, like 80 homes, and all you can see is just chimneys, and that's it. It's I mean, I didn't even know it was capable of doing what it did.
Johnny Gomes joining us. I mean, there's so many things in the answer, Johnny, I want to ask you about, but the photos and the footage that have come out of the fires and the aftermath of the fires, it feels like something out of an apocalyptic movie. I can only imagine what it's like to be there in person, and you're right there on the scene right now. What's it like to see all that firsthand?
Yeah, man, it's unbelievable. I mean, you see some of, like, these melted wheels of the rims on cars where you just, I mean, it just says thousands degrees. You know, you stand what was a neighborhood and now you can see like a mile straight through, or you can see like 20 feet because it's a fence, a roof, a house, whatever. Cars flipped upside down because their gas tank blew. Schools, freaking, I mean, you name it, dude. It's, I mean, there's been wildfires, of course, throughout California where the whole hillside went down. But, you know, you're talking, you know, 170 acres of city and town that got burnt down. It's a sight not to be seen or felt, but it's as real as it gets right now.
Listen, these days you can get practically everything on demand, like our podcast. Listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. So why are you still going to the post office and dealing with their limited hours when you can get postage on demand with Stamps.com? Anything that you can do at the post office, you can now do right from your desk with Stamps.com. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package using your own computer and printer. And unlike the post office, Stamps.com never closes, so you can get postage whenever you need it, 24/7. As an example, we grind out every single day here on the program. Back in the day, if I had to get something out, or I had to get something to a potential guest or a team, I'd have to leave the office and get to the post office. It was horrible, and I will never do that ever again, and nor should you. Use Stamps.com. Do not interrupt what you're doing to leave for the post office. And right now, use my name, Rome, for this very special offer. It's a 4-week trial. It includes postage and a digital scale. But don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the radio microphone. It's at the very top of the homepage and type in Rome. Again, Stamps.com, code name Rome. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office ever again. I know I won't, and neither should you. Johnny Gomes joining us from the scene. Johnny, you talk about towns that are burning down. For those who do not know, what is life like in communities like Petaluma? What are the people who live there like?
Yeah, man. I mean, we're all about eating local, buying local. You know, there's so much awesome going on up here. You know, the wine country, a.k.a. God's country. I mean, you don't get those nicknames for accidents, you know. Overwhelming support from, you know, everyone to the shelters, to where the shelters have to turn stuff away because people have been so generous. Food truck after food truck after food truck donating their time and their food, parked out in front of the National Guard where the firefighters are stationed, at the sheriff's station, at the police station. It's been unbelievable how this community has come together for the first responders and the thousands upon thousands that lost their house.
Now, Johnny, you sent your 2.5-ton M35 truck up to the area to help out with the relief efforts. I'm looking at the photos of that truck right now. It is a monster. How did you get a hold of that thing in the first place, and what are you looking to do with it right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of my just-in-case truck, you know? Right. Not really the doomsday prepper, but found that truck a bunch of years ago, and, you know, why not own a land boat, if you will, and it's got to, you know, turn into helpful up here. I mean, you're talking about 7,000 vehicles that are just metal right now, and, you know, they're going to need all the help they can get once the National Guard leaves and they go, here you go. I mean, how do you move 7,000 vehicles to a dump site? How do you move, you know, 4,000 houses that got torched from the iron beams to the chimneys to the ash to the garbage? So, you know, I could fit 2.5 ton of weight on that thing and, man, you know, give someone the keys and go to work.
Johnny Gomes being active in the relief efforts in the Wine Country fires. Now, Johnny, you mentioned that some of your friends had to flee their homes early in the morning, and only later did they realize that the only things they had left were what they had in their pockets with them as they ran. What's it been like to hear those stories?
Yeah, man, I mean, it's just story after story of people with third-degree burns on their feet because they didn't even have time to put shoes on in the middle of the night to run out of their house because this thing was just so hot with 70-mile-an-hour winds just covering everything, to people riding miles on bicycles with, you know, almost like a tsunami of flames, like chasing them down the hill. And it's like, it's crazy that you don't gather around the dude with a story. Like, everybody has that story. Everybody was affected. People couldn't get out of the front door, couldn't go over the back fence, so boom, they jump in the pool. They're sitting in the pool for 4 hours surrounded by flames, one after another, and they're at about 40 deaths right now. But the other thing is, I mean, they're upwards of like 100, you know, still active missing people, because there are some people that just ran and didn't have a cell phone, and now they don't have cars and just wandering around, which is bananas. But hopefully that, you know, 100 missing people doesn't come true, but it's real.
Now, Johnny, you've been through so much in your life, but when you see this kind of devastation, there's really nothing that can prepare you or anybody else for it. What kind of an impact has this had on you as a person?
Yeah, man. I mean, it's just all about being present. You know, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on in sports and in the world and the country right now. But, man, if you just take a step back and be grateful for, you know, where your feet are, wherever they are, man. For one, you're upright and kicking, and just be present that you got a shirt on your back, the simple things. You know, I mean, the stuff that, you know, the shelters are getting asked to be donated, you're like, oh, damn, I didn't even, like, realize that was a necessity. You know, just take it for granted. It's bananas.
Johnny, can you explain that? I've heard that line a number of times, and I think that's a great, great line. Know where your feet are. What's that mean to you? What does that mean exactly, know where your feet are?
Yeah, man, just know where your feet are, man. Just, you know, just be present with where you are present, who you surround yourself with, what you got going on. Trust me, there's a lot worse that could be happening, but just take in the moment, take in what's present, and make the best of that little time that you're doing right there.
Before I let you go, you did say something. You said, quote, I'm what I like to call fake retired, so I can go do that and then get a cooler and sit in a neighborhood to make sure nothing gets looted. I'm going to put my energy wherever it's most needed. So are you pretty much setting up shop like that? Did you roll that truck in? Are you looking over things and making sure that all's good?
Yeah, man, I mean, it's, you know, every tragedy, you know, is tough, and then some good could come out of it, but then there's a whole lot of negative, man. I mean, you know, you got dudes rolling in with just red trucks, and they're putting fake stickers on the side saying they're, you know, the fire department. And I mean, if you're down with looting and if you're down with that, I mean, there's nothing but sitting ducks here. You know, I mean, there's mandatory evacuation areas that cover 5 miles. So if you're, I mean, there's no one home. You can just book on that. But they got all that under control now that the National Guard sitting their big old Hummers out there and not letting people go. But yeah, there was a couple days where it was kind of like a free-for-all.
Tell you what, man, they got a special place in hell for people like that.
Yeah, that's exactly right, man. I mean, these people, you know, I mean, within an hour, these people are running out of their house barefoot with you know, hoping their cat and their dog and their neighbor make it. And then fast forward in an hour, you know, some freaking jack wagon wants to walk into the house like he's a fake firefighter and just start taking TVs. So it'll go back to them, though. Those are the people that get hit by a bus, so they can suck on it.
Johnny Gomes joining us. Johnny, you started a GoFundMe campaign to raise money for relief. If people who are listening want to get involved, they want to help out, where do they go to find more information and make a donation? How can they help?
Yeah, man, it's the GoFundMe, you know, website, and 707 Relief is what I named it. And there's a little story there, but, you know, where it stands right now, it's like what's needed, you know, I mean, imagine your life, like what's needed if you had nothing. I mean, nothing to where, I mean, people can't even get a hold of anyone because their cell phone is dead because they have nowhere to charge their cell phone, even if they had their cell phone. So I'm just going to get this together, get as much money as I can, convert it to gift cards, and let these people kind of kickstart their lives any way they can, whether it's school supplies that was torched in the fire, whether it was, you know, all the sports equipment got torched. So I'm just going to do what I can, man, get some money and, you know, give it back to the people.
After dropping the first two games of the series and having their hearts ripped out by Justin Turner, the Cubs were returning home to the friendly confines. And what they needed more than anything else was to get right in a hurry. Nothing would be better than to get out to an early lead, get their fans fired up, get that stadium rocking, which is exactly what happened when Kyle Schwarber stepped to the plate in the bottom of the first.
Here is Kyle Schwarber. He's had five career postseason home runs. And Kyle drives one in the air, deep left center field. This ball's got a chance. Gone. Kyle Schwarber gives the Cubs a 1-0 lead.
That's what I'm saying. It's exactly what I'm talking about. You let that big dog eat. And then you let him flip that bat afterwards. That is exactly the thing that Joe Maddon's crew needed. The crowd's going ballistic. The Cubs' dugout was fired up. Even those arsonists in the bullpen were dancing. The defending champs are back in business. Except that lasted for maybe half of an inning, because in the top of the second, Andre Ethier came up, and then he went out.
Ethier with a fly ball to deep right field, down the line, and it is gone. A home run. Andre Ethier, just over the ivy, down the right field line, has tied the score at one.
Dodgers radio. You know you're pushing all the right buttons if you're Dave Roberts. And Andre Ethier, who hit two home runs all year long, is going yard in his first at bat. Tie game. But that didn't last long, because in the top of the third, along came Chris Taylor.
On 3-1, Taylor with a fly ball to center field. Well hit. Jay going back to the wall. He looks up, and it's gone. A home run. Chris Taylor is shot over the wall in center, and the Dodgers take a 2-1 lead.
So the guy who had one home run entering this season jumped ship for the second time in the series, 2-1 Dodgers. But that was not the end of the game or the end of the series. No, that moment came in the sixth inning when Carl Edwards Jr. walked Yu Darvish with the bases loaded. One thing for a relief pitcher to walk a starting pitcher with the bases loaded. That's bad. That's terrible. But doing it on four pitches, that's the worst. If you want a time of death for this particular series, it was the moment the fourth ball left Edwards' hand and Darvish started jogging down to first. If Joe Maddon didn't want to dry hump his bullpen in game two, I have no idea what he wanted to do with it in game three. You can't have a reliever walk a pitcher like that. But it wasn't just the bullpen. Wilson Contreras had some really weird moments behind the plate. Ian Happ dropped a fly ball in center. Alex Avila and Albert Almora had a bizarre moment on the base pass where they both ended up on third base, only to be bailed out by the ivy. It seemed like the entire team was melting down, and Joe Maddon didn't have a single answer for it. And as shaky as the Cubs have been on the mound, in the field, and on the bases, it's not like they're much better at the plate. They're hitting 160 with 32 strikeouts for the series, and they still have not scored a run on the Dodgers' bullpen. This was a team that faced more than a century's worth of pressure last season, took it all in stride. But if I didn't know any better, I would think that the moment was getting to them right now. Suddenly, that moment is too big for them. The moment and the Dodgers, because LA is rolling. 6-0 in the postseason, 2-0 on the road. Chris Taylor is raking. Yasiel Puig is going Yasiel Puig in the best possible way at the best possible time. And Yu Darvish paid for himself last night. He gave up that home run to Schwarber in the first, but then he settled down and he pitched into the seventh, striking out seven along the way. Hard to say that one game makes a big trade entirely worth it, but that one game pretty much made that trade entirely worth it. Because being up 3-0 is so much different than being up 2-1. Just as being down 0-3 is totally different from being down 1-2. Dodger fans may not want to hear this, but I'm going to say it anyway. I don't want to say the series is over, but that series is over. Don't get me wrong. 2017 Cubs are a good team. I just don't think they're the 2004 Red Sox. They are dead on arrival, and Madden and his players are going to have some questions to answer this offseason. They're done. Texans corner Kareem Jackson. Listen, when you and I spoke in the offseason, we talked a little bit about the team drafting Deshaun Watson. Now that you've seen him on the field, Kareem, how impressed are you with the way he's come in as a rookie and the results that he's delivered?
I'm very impressed. You know, anytime, I mean, at the quarterback spot for a rookie, you know, to come in and play is very tough. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, me and Coach O'Brien and then the staff, you know, definitely been, you know, teaching them, you know, some great things and, you know, definitely helping them out along the way. But, you know, I think I'm more so impressed on how he carries himself off the field. You know, we all knew he was a big-time talent coming in, but, you know, to see him, how he carries himself in the locker room and, you know, off the field and stuff like that, you know, with him being a leader in the locker room, you know, a vocal guy and on the practice field as well, you know. So he's definitely, you know, doing some great things right now.
Damn, you're playing chess. I'm playing checkers. You ripped my second question. I was going to say, he became the first rookie in league history to throw at least three touchdowns in three straight games. But when you see him doing this as a rookie, how much of that is about physical talent, but how much is about his mental and psychological makeup?
Oh, definitely. You know, like I said, the way he, you know, prepares week in and week out, you know, it's just amazing to kind of see him, you know, how he carries himself and, you know, just preparing for the game because we all know, you know, the game is just, it's about, you know, the mental preparation throughout the week just as much as it's about, you know, going out there and being talented as well. So, you know, I mean, he's doing some great things.
So you're 3-3, and I'm watching you this season, and it seems to me one thing that's really clear in the first six games is your versatility. You've played corner, you've played safety, you've played the star position. How much pride do you take in that versatility, and then how do you go about preparing to play so many different spots?
I take a lot of pride into it. You know, I mean, for me, it's just about, you know, whatever I can do to help the team. You know, if I had to, you know, play a couple snaps at safety, you know, I definitely play the star spot, I play corner. You know, whatever it is, you know, however the team wants to use me, our defensive coaches want to use me, you know, that week or whenever they call me to, you know, play these different spots, you know, I'm definitely all for it. But for me, just preparing for it, you know, that's probably the biggest challenge is just kind of trying to translate, you know, from being inside to playing the corner, you know, playing the safety, you know, you kind of see things a little bit different. But, you know, just kind of looking at it in a different perspective every time I watch a film and stuff. But, I mean, I think now I've kind of caught the hang of it, so, you know, it kind of comes natural now.
Yep. Kareem Jackson of the Houston Texans joining us. You're also the second leading tackler on the defense, and you have never been afraid of contact. Some DBs may shy away from that contact. So what's your mentality when you're on the field and you're lining somebody up?
For me, when in that situation, in that time, it's just all about – whatever situation it is that presents itself, it's all about getting them down on the ground. So, you know, I just try to get as close as I can to them and, you know, just kind of go at them. So, you know, for me, like I say, it's all about getting them down.
You know, I wonder, as a defense, you're playing without J.J. Watt and Whitney Mercilus. First off, as a teammate, I mean, this is part of the business. You understand that. But what was it like for you to see both of those guys go down?
It's definitely tough, you know, to lose both of those guys and, know, those guys being leaders on our defense and, you know, two of our best players on defense, you know, it's definitely tough, you know. And for us as a team, you know, those guys, you know, play some hell of a ball for us. But for us, it's just all about, you know, the next guy, you know, has to step in and be ready to go. You know, the coaches and have done a great job of, you know, we have a competitive roster, so the next guy, you know, can step in and, you know, and perform at a high level. So, I guess, like you say, it's part of the business. You know, guys, you lose players, you know, every week to some type of injury. But, you know, the next guy just has to be ready to go.
You know, there's that next man up mentality, and obviously you'd argue the same thing. It's kind of hard to next man up J.J. Watt or Whitney Mercilus, but it is the business, and guys have to be ready. I'm wondering, though, when that happens in that moment, all right, and you've got guys that you're as close to as teammates and friends, in that very moment, how do you block that out and just go on to the very next play in that moment?
I mean, like, it's definitely tough, you know, to see guys that you, you know, you fought so hard with all off season and training camp, you know, go down, you know, throughout the course of a game. But you just have to tell yourself, you know, you got to play the next play. You know, we got to finish the game, and, you know, I definitely have to check on them after. But at that point in time, you know, throughout that game, you definitely have to lock in and, you know, just try to help guys around and, you know, just talk to them and make sure they're locked in as well. You know, and we definitely have to finish the game and try to get a W.
We're talking to Kareem Jackson for a few more moments. You know, I mentioned when we lost connection with you, I kind of reset that you've got the Astros and the Yankees. I know you've been following the Astros in the postseason. Things looked really good a few days back when they were up 2-0. Now that series is tied up 2 games apiece. How are you feeling about the Astros' chances against the Yankees?
I'm still feeling real confident about these guys. They play some great ball all year, you know. And for the Yankees to come back and, you know, tie the series 2-2, you know, they're just facing a little bit of adversity. So, I mean, they face it all year at some point in time. I think they'll definitely, you know, be able to pull the series out.
Kareem, when you and I spoke back in May, we talked about your mother and the fact that she is a 2-time breast cancer survivor. We talked about how your sister beat leukemia. You're participating in the Crucial Catch Challenge, where people can make a pledge towards every tackle that you have in the month of October. So what's it mean to you to be able to contribute to the fight against cancer in such a manner?
It means a lot to me and my family as well, you know, being as though we went through my family, we fought cancer. My mom, like you said, 2-time breast cancer survivor, my sister, a leukemia survivor, you know. We just know the effect that cancer has on the family. So anytime we can get involved, you know, whether it's the Crucial Catch Challenge or, you know, with my foundation, doing stuff around the city, you know, we definitely jump at the opportunity.
You know, Kareem, my father had leukemia back in the day, and I remember his fight. I remember his battle, and even to this day, and that was so long ago, it's had a lasting impact on me. I'm kind of curious, what have you learned from your mother and sister as you've watched them go through what they've gone through?
Just, you know, to see them both go through that and to continue to fight and to beat cancer and here today, you know, with me and being able to come to my games and root me on and stuff, you know, it's definitely, you know, to see that, you know, I've learned, you know, the fight is never over. You know, you never give up. You know, you continue to fight to the end. So that definitely be the biggest thing that I learned from them.
I'm starting to think this Aaron Judge dude is pretty good at baseball. He woke the Yankees up in Game 3, and right as they were about to nap it out for the winter, he hit them with the paddles again in Game 4. Yesterday's game could not have gotten off to a better start for Houston. Lance McCullers Jr. was dealing. The Astros scored 3 in the top of the 6th on a bases-clearing double. They added another in the 7th on an error by Starlin Castro. At that point, they were 9 outs away from a 3-1 lead, with Dallas Keuchel going tonight and Justin Verlander on Friday, if necessary. So they had their foot on the Yankees' throat. They had a chance to close it out. What I'm saying is, 4-0 in the 7th felt like enough. Not even my words, though. Carlos Beltran said it. He told Yahoo, "We thought that was going to be enough to win the ball game. It wasn't." End quote. No, it was not. The truth is, it probably would have been enough to beat most teams, almost any team except for the team that has one Aaron James Judge. because Mr. FOMO came to the plate in the bottom of the seventh, and he changed that series yet again.
The pitch to Judge swung on. A high drive to deep center. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. Oh, what a Judgian blast to Monument Park in dead center field.
According to the stats, it was 427 feet to center. Seems kind of weird that when I'm talking about an Aaron Judge home run that goes 427, I almost feel like saying only 427, but it's true because that's what this guy does to baseballs. Gary Sanchez made it 4-2 by driving in Didi Gregorius. Brett Gardner made it 4-3 in the eighth. But as much as that was a team effort, last night was all about Judge because he came up again in the eighth.
Here's the 2-2. Swung on and drove it to deep left. It is high. It is far. It is off the wall, or it came out. Judge holds it second. It was off the wall, a double. The tying run scores. The Yankees have come all the way back to tie the game at four.
Tie game. And then Judge and Gregorius came around to score on a Sanchez double, and suddenly 6-4 Yankees. And the Astros are trying to figure out exactly what the hell happened. But Houston's not alone. I'm trying to figure out exactly what happened and how it's happening. How do you explain this? How does a guy in his rookie season just show up like this? How does he hit 52 home runs in the regular season, essentially lock up the Rookie of the Year award, have a great look at the MVP, and then show up like this in the postseason? And then do all of that in New York where the spotlight is so bright and the pressure is so great? Judge has not just changed the Yankees' chances in the series, he has changed Yankee fans in this series. Ask anybody. They will tell you the new Yankee Stadium has never been as loud as the old Yankee Stadium until right now. Ask Todd Frazier, quote, "It just keeps getting louder and louder. That double by Sanchez, I thought my head was going to explode. I'm looking in the crowd and going crazy. It was just spectacular," end quote. Joe Girardi was in the old yard back in the old days, the loud old days. He says it all sounds pretty familiar.
I just feel like the fans are back. And, you know, I see things that I haven't seen in a while, and it reminds me a lot when I was playing here. So it's been fun to watch.
So now the Yankees have gotten up off the canvas again. I mean, you cannot shovel dirt on these guys. Not when they're down 2-0, not ever. Game 5 tonight. Keuchel v. Tanaka. And if you think you know what's going to happen, you're a liar, because there's no way of knowing. Keuchel could be just as masterful as he was in Game 1. The Astros' bats could break out again. The Yankees could keep rolling. I just know that if Aaron Judge is playing, I'm watching, because I do not want to miss out. Can't miss out when that guy plays. Clones, thank you so much for listening, and thank you for checking out Episode 9 of the Jim Rome Podcast with Bill Cowher and Kevin Millar. I appreciate you all very much. Check back here tomorrow for more, and I'll see you then.